Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really challenging and crucial area of medicine. We're looking at the science behind severe burn injuries, going deep into how the body responds when its main shield is breached, and you know the critical steps needed to manage that.
It's absolutely critical. And it's a field that really shows how far medicine has advanced. I mean, historically, a major burn that was often fatal.
Right.
But things changed. We started understanding the systemic effects like burn shock, developed air fluid therapies, antibiotics, surgical techniques like excising dead tissue became standard. Plus, specialized teams, biologic dressings, it all added up.
It really shifted the odds.
Fundamentally altered survival chances, yeah.
So our mission for you listening is to really unpack what happens when the body's biggest organ, the skin, gets compromised, and to understand those immediate priorities. Because with burns, that first hour, it can dictate everything. Let's start right there with the skin itself.
Yeah, the skin, often overlooked, isn't it? It's not just a covering. It's this amazing biological barrier maintaining homeostasis. It's got, well, four main jobs.
Okay.
Protection, obviously. First line of defense. Then regulating temperature and fluid, absolutely vital. Communication through all of those sensory nerves.
Yeah.
And it mounts that initial inflammatory response
yeah.
to
instant. Then when a burn hits that structure, it's complex. We know the epidermis, the outer bit.
Yeah.
But the real action is deeper, right?
Exactly. That's the dermis. That's the support structure. Collagen, elastin fibers. It's got the blood vessels, sweat glands, nerve endings, all the machinery for control. And then below that, you have the subcutaneous tissue, that thicker fatty layer connecting everything to the muscle and bone underneath.
So if a burn goes deep enough to destroy all that, we're not just talking about a wound on the surface.
No, not at all. We're talking systemic failure. That's the key thing. The functional loss is immediate, meaning the patient loses thermoregulation, the sweating mechanism, the ability to control blood flow in the skin part, etc. Vasoconstriction, vasodilation, it's gone. Sensation is lost in that area too.
And in long term?
Long term, the body can't regrow hair there, can't produce melanin. The firewall is effectively down. And once that firewall is breached, the patient faces these core threats. Doesn't matter if it's thermal, electrical, radiation, infection's a huge risk. Hypothermia, because they can't control their temperature anymore. And then critically, hypovolemia and shock.
Okay, let's dig into that shock mechanism in burns. It's kind of a double whammy, isn't it? Hypovolemic shock, yes, but it's not just fluid leaking out from the burn.
Right. That's part of it, but the bigger issue often is the internal shift.
The invisible damage.
Exactly. Massive volume shifts inside the body. Fluid that should be in the blood vessels starts oozing out into the interstitial spaces. You get this huge internal swelling.
Which can be life-threatening.
Absolutely. This is why fluids are so critical so early. That internal shift, if you don't correct it fast, leads to shock. Shock means poor oxygen and glucose delivery to cells, and you can't clear waste products effectively.
So fluid resuscitation isn't just helpful, it's the absolute priority to keep things perfused.
The immediate necessity, yes.
Now here's where defining the damage gets interesting. Thermal burns.
Mm-hmm.
They happen when skin temperature goes above, what, about 118 Fahrenheit, 47.8 Celsius?
Around there, yeah. But severity isn't just temperature, it's a combination. Temperature, sure, but also the amount of heat energy involved, and critically, how long the exposure lasted.
Duration is key.
Very key.
Okay.
And the damage pattern is often described in these three zones, kind of like ripples.
Okay.
In the center, the worst part, that's the zone of coagulation. Tissue is dead. Irreversible.
Gone.
Gone. Then on the very outside, you have the zone of hyperemia. Minimal damage here, red, inflamed, but very likely to recover fully.
And sandwiched between them.
That's the zone of stasis. This is the crucial area clinically. It's damaged. Maybe circulation is poor, but it's potentially salvageable.
So that's the battleground.
That's the battleground. Hmm. Interventions like rapid cooling, good fluid resuscitation, they're aimed squarely at saving that zone of stasis, stopping it from dying off and becoming part of the coagulation zone.
Okay, makes sense. But before we even talk depth, there's the question of how much skin is burned, right? The scope.
Absolutely. Before depth, you need the total body surface area, the TBSA. That calculation drives the whole management plan, especially the fluid calculations. It's the first big number you need.
And how do clinicians figure that out quickly in an emergency?
Two main tools, usually. For adults, the rule of nines is common. Divides the body into segments that are roughly 9% each, plus 1% for the groin. Lets you get a quick estimate.
Okay, rule of nines. What's the other one?
For smaller burns or patchy burns, maybe less than 10% total, we often use the rule of palms. The patient's own palm, fingers included, represents about 1% of their TBSA. You can sort of measure it out that way.
Got it. So rule of nines for bigger areas, rule of palms for smaller ones.
Right.
Once you have that TBSA percentage, then you look at depth.
Then you assess depth.
And we categorize that damage. Superficial, partial thickness, full thickness, and subdermal. But maybe instead of just layers, let's focus on what tells you the difference clinically, like sensation.
Sensation is a huge differentiator.
Yes.
Superficial burns. That's just the epidermis. Skin's red, maybe swollen, but usually no blisters.
Mm-hmm.
And crucially, they hurt a lot. Nerve endings are irritated, but they heal pretty fast.
Okay. Painful means superficial generally. Then partial thickness.
Partial thickness involves the epidermis and some part of the dermis. These are also very painful, often have those weeping blisters. You can subdivide them into superficial partial or deep partial based on how much dermis is involved.
Right.
But they still have some healing potential.
Right. Still painful potential to heal. Then we get to the really serious ones.
Exactly. Full thickness burns. These destroy both the epidermis and the entire dermis. Skin might look white, waxy, maybe leathery brown, or even charred. And here's the key you mentioned, sensation. The nerve endings are destroyed.
So often numb.
Often numb or painless in the center of the burn. That's a major red flag. And because the dermis is gone, the skin can't regenerate on its own. Needs grafting.
And then the worst category, subdermal.
Subdermal, that goes through all the skin layers and into the underlying fat muscle. Sometimes even down to bone or involving internal organs. Sensation's completely gone. These are devastating, often disfiguring injuries. But, you know, as bad as these external burns are, often the most immediate life threat isn't the skin damage itself. It's from breathing things in. Inhalation injuries.
Right. You hear that they account for the majority of deaths in fires.
Sadly, yes. That's often the case. You have to be highly suspicious if the fire was in an enclosed space. Look for signs like hoarseness, stridor, that high-pitched breathing sound, singed nose hairs or facial hair, burns on the face, or any carbon soot in the sputum.
And the damage isn't always obvious.
No. Superheating gases tend to burn the upper airway, nose, throat, larynx, causes massive swelling, potentially blocking the airway quickly. But steam or hot particles can sometimes get past that and damage the vocal cords or even the lower airways, the lungs themselves.
And then there's the invisible danger, carbon monoxide, CO.
Yes. The silent killer, absolutely.
Yeah.
CO comes from incomplete combustion, anything burning without enough oxygen.
And the problem is how it interacts with our blood.
Precisely. The physiological trap is just huge.
Yeah.
CO binds to the hemoglobin in red blood cells, the sites where oxygen normally hitches a ride about 250 times more easily than oxygen does.
250 times. Wow.
Yeah. So even a small amount of CO in the air can rapidly tie up a huge percentage of your oxygen carrying capacity.
Yeah.
The patient is essentially suffocating at the cellular level, but the delivery system is full of the wrong thing.
And this creates a huge diagnostic pitfall, right? The pulse oximeter.
Yeah. The biggest one. Because standard pulse oximeters just measure saturation, how much hemoglobin is bound to something. They can't tell if it's bound to oxygen or CO.
So the reading can look normal or even high.
Exactly. You could have a patient who is profoundly hypoxic from CO, but their pulse ox reading is 99% or 100%. So the absolute rule is, if you suspect CO exposure based on the situation in enclosed space, fire, faulty furnace, whatever, you never trust the pulse oximeter reading for oxygenation. You need a different test, like a co-oximeter on a blood gas analysis.
Crucial point. Never trust the pulse ox with suspected CO. That same principle that the mechanism of injury dictates your approach, that applies to other burn types too, doesn't it? Like chemicals.
Absolutely. With chemical burns, the key is that the burning process continues as long as that chemical is in contact with the skin. It keeps reacting.
So step one is stop the reaction.
Stop the reaction. For most liquid chemicals, the answer is immediate and copious flushing with water. Just wash it away. Lots and lots of water.
But not for everything. What about powders?
Ah, good point. If it's a dry powder, you must brush off as much of the powder as possible first. If you add water straight away, you might actually activate the chemical or create a more concentrated solution right on the skin. So brush, then flush.
Okay. Brush powders, flush liquids. And are some chemicals worse than others?
Generally, alkali burns, things like drain cleaner, cement, tend to be worse than acid burns.
Yeah.
They penetrate deeper and are harder to neutralize, and they can be particularly devastating to the eyes.
You mentioned exceptions too. Specific chemicals need specific handling.
Yes, there are a few key ones to know. Dry lime, for example, brush it off thoroughly first, then flush. Hot tar, you don't try to peel it off immediately. You immerse the area in cold water to cool and solidify the tar first, which makes removal easier and stops the burning.
And sodium metal. You hear about that in labs sometimes.
Right. Sodium metal reacts violently with water, causes an explosion and fire. So you never use water. You cover it with mineral oil to smother the reaction. It's about knowing the chemistry.
Definitely need to know your exceptions.
Okay, what about electrical burns? They seem like they could be tricky.
Very tricky and profoundly deceptive. You might only see a small entry wound where the current went in and maybe a small exit wound where it left.
But the real damage is hidden.
The real damage is internal, along the path the electricity took through the body. There's a very high risk of severe, unseen injury, cardiac arrest from disrupting the heart's rhythm, nervous system damage, deep muscle death called rhabdomyolysis, compartment syndrome. The external burn size tells you almost nothing about the internal destruction.
So small burn outside could mean catastrophe inside.
Exactly. And lightning strikes, they're a form of electrical injury, but the massive energy and rapid expansion of air often makes them present more like blast injuries, ruptured eardrums, lung damage, blunt trauma, in addition to the electrical and thermal effects. So with all this complexity, different depths, TBSA, inhalation, chemicals, electricity, how do you approach it in an emergency? What comes first? It always comes back to the basics, doesn't it? The core protocol. No matter how dramatic that burn looks, you deal with the immediate life threats first. ABCDEs.
Airway, breathing, circulation.
Disability, exposure. You get those under control before you turn your full attention to the burn wound itself.
Makes sense.
And under C, for circulation, that's where fluid resuscitation comes in, right? We talked about the shock. Who needs fluids urgently?
Generally, any adult patient with burns covering more than 20% of their total body surface area needs formal fluid resuscitation. For kids, it's often a lower threshold, maybe 10, 15%.
And timing is everything.
Timing is absolutely critical. The evidence is clear. If you delay starting adequate resuscitation by more than about 2 hours from the time of the injury, mortality rates go up significantly.
Wow. Okay, so how much fluid? Is there a standard formula?
There is. The most commonly used is the consensus formula, sometimes called the Parkland formula or modified versions of it. For the first 24 hours, it's typically 2 to 4 milliliters of crystalloid fluid, usually lactated Ringer solution, multiplied by the patient's body weight in kilograms, multiplied again by the percentage of TBSA burned. So 2, 4 millimol times kilograms times percent PBSA.
That sounds like potentially a lot of fluid.
It is often a huge volume. And the timing of giving it is just as important as the total amount. You give half of that calculated total volume during the first 8 hours from the time the burn occurred, not from when they arrive at the hospital.
Critical difference. First 8 hours post-injury.
Correct. And then the remaining half is given over the next 16 hours. That precise timing is crucial to combat that fluid shift effectively.
And here's another really important clinical point. Based on that fluid shift timeline, that hypovolemic shock from the burn itself, it takes time to develop.
Right. It's usually not immediate.
So if a patient arrives immediately after being burned and they're already in shock, low blood pressure, fast heart rate.
That's a massive red flag.
Yeah.
That shock is almost certainly not just from the burn yet. You have to assume there's another major injury causing bleeding until proven otherwise. Look for internal hemorrhage, other trauma.
Got it. Early shock means look for another cause. But on the flip side, giving all that fluid, are there risks? Can you give too much?
Absolutely. It's a balancing act. The risk is something called fluid creep, basically, over-resuscitation, giving too much fluid too fast.
And that causes problems.
It can. It can worsen the edema, the swelling, everywhere, not just in the burn, but systemically. It can contribute to pulmonary edema, abdominal compartment syndrome, or compartment syndrome in burned limbs, where the swelling cuts off circulation. Older adults and young children are particularly vulnerable to fluid overload.
So constant monitoring and adjusting the fluids based on response is key.
Constant reassessment. Urine output is a common guide.
Okay. So ABCDEs managed, fluid started. What about managing the burn wound itself before a transport?
The key is to stop the burning process if it's ongoing and then manage temperature. Cool small burn areas with cool running water for a short time. If large areas are still hot, you can use cool compresses briefly.
But never ice, right?
Absolutely never apply ice directly. That can cause vasoconstriction, worsen the tissue damage, and rapidly lead to hypothermia, which is already a risk.
Okay, no ice. And what about putting stuff on it? Ointments, creams?
Generally, no. Not in the initial phase for deeper burns. Avoid salves, ointments, creams, butter, any home remedies. They can trap heat, obscure the view for assessment, and increase infection risk. Just cover the burn with clean, dry dressings or sheets.
Clean and dry. Got it. And finally, who needs to go to a specialized burn center immediately?
There are specific criteria. Any patient with burns covering more than 10% TBSA generally qualifies. Any burn involving critical areas, the face, hands, feet, genitalia, or major joints, because those affect function so significantly.
Makes sense.
Also, any full thickness burn, regardless of size. And definitely any significant electrical burn, chemical burn, or suspected inhalation injury. Those all require specialized expertise found at a burn unit.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what are the big takeaways here? It seems like severe burns are this unique catastrophe. It's not just the skin damage.
No, it's that dual threat. You have the obvious external destruction, yes. But paired with that is this immediate, profound internal systemic failure. The shock from fluid shifts, the danger of toxic inhalation.
And understanding the specific rules, how to estimate TBSA, the trap of CO poisoning, the precise fluid timing and calculations that seems to be the difference maker, saving that zone of stasis, maybe even saving the patient.
It really is. The
Yeah.
initial management sets the entire course, and we have to acknowledge this is just the start. The long game for burn recovery, it's brutal.
Yeah.
It's measured in weeks, months, sometimes years, not hours. Beyond the huge emotional, psychological, and financial costs, the physical recovery is immense. Our sources mention that rule of thumb. Roughly 1 day of inpatient hospital treatment for every 1% of TBSA burned.
1 day per percent. Wow, that adds up incredibly fast for a large burn.
It really does. And even after discharge, patients often face lasting problems with thermoregulation, chronic pain, altered sensation, reduced motor function, scarring. It's a long road.
We've learned that, a patient might look okay initially, but their condition can worsen dramatically over that first 24 hours as those systemic effects really kick in. The understanding of burns, how we treat them, it's clearly evolved massively over time. So thinking about that immense strain, that 1 day inpatient, 1% TBSA, what might the next big leap be? What's the breakthrough needed in that initial care, maybe in the first few hours or days, that could finally start cutting down that incredibly demanding recovery curve? What's the next game changer we're looking for?